Greetings to all of God's people.
This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're now in lesson 140, and last time we're in Deuteronomy, where God made it very plain through Moses, his mind, about all the nations that are far away from Israel, that if they go to war against Israel, Israel goes to war against them for whatever reason, they should first proclaim peace to them, and if they don't comply with that, God is going to give the cities into the hands of Israel, and what they're supposed to do is to destroy all the males, all the uncircumcised, and then take the women to themselves and the little ones. And obviously the little boys among them were going to be circumcised, because God, again, and He shows it in every step of the way, as you study the whole scriptures, that is the whole story of the children of Israel from beginning until the end. That's the way God dealt with Israel when they were uncircumcised in their heart, and that's the way God dealt with Israel when they are uncircumcised in the flesh, and with their enemies. He's not a respecter of person. You see, He was consistent in everything. And throughout all these places, and there are many places, it's not the intention of go through all of them, God made it very plain what His feelings are about circumcision because of what it really means. You see, this is what we have to concentrate on. It's not the physical act itself. It's what it really means. And so even when Paul later on, you know, boasts about, that's quote-unquote boasting, because he says, you know, I'm going to speak like a foolish man, because some of the ministers, that is some of the teachers, some of the pastors who were from the children of Israel, they were boasting about their ability to teach and this and that and the other thing. Well, he said, well, allow me also to do that, a little bit of that, you know, and the first thing that he said in terms of his own qualifications is that circumcised the eighth day. You see, in other words, he's not talking about the act itself. He's talking about the fact, look, I from the beginning of my life was obedient to the law of God, to the ways of God. You see, and that this was the emphasis on that statement. So whenever you read it, you have to understand the entirety of what it really means. There's a whole world behind it. And people, they don't understand it, they just zero in on the act itself, circumcision, and think that's all God is talking about. Well, that's all the Jews were talking about. You see? And that's what the issue that they had there was, unless the Gentiles circumcise and keep the whole law of Moses. That was the issue, you see? Not just the physical act itself, which was only symbolic to their willingness to totally obey God. And of course, the Jews thought that way because of all the scriptures and all the teachings that they had before that. What they did not understand is that you have to consider the whole matter. There is also the issue of timing. You see? And when people are not ready for it, you don't give them everything all at one time, because you're going to choke them. No more than a baby that is not ready. You don't give him a bone, you know, with a huge amount of flesh around it, and a big steak or whatever it may be, and expect him to eat it. And you don't give meat to babes, give them milk. That was the issue. They were trying to force the entirety of the plate, you know, and everything that was in it into the throat of the Gentile that was not ready for the whole thing. See, so the issue was not whether they should be circumcised or not. The issue was a matter of timing. And unless you study the whole matter from the beginning until the end, and you see what God said about it, how He felt about it, what the prophets said about it, what Moses said about it, you see, and what God said about it into the future. And then from that point of view, begin to understand what was happening there. If you don't do it that way, obviously, like many, you develop misconceptions about the whole issue. And so to this very day, that misconception is there, and it's so deep, so that when even children of Israel come to know who they really are, they say, that's not for me, because I'm spiritual. My heart is circumcised. I don't need to obey this law. And all that is because of misunderstanding. And so they develop a resentment against it to begin with. Unfortunately, many of the children of Israel who claim to be people of God, members of the household of God, they have an undercurrent of resentment. Oftentimes they don't even realize it against the law of God. And they're still, with their old thinking, they think, well, that's Jewish stuff. That's old stuff. That's Old Testament stuff. It's not for me. That's ignorance and blindness. And God is not interested in, you know, this kind of ignorance or blindness, you know, among His own people. He wants people like Abraham who are willing to wholeheartedly obey Him. And yes, you're not going to understand everything all at the beginning of time. God is patient with all of us. But when the time comes, we must. You see, we should never shut our ears. We must allow the Holy Spirit, when the time comes, to illuminate us, to lead us to truth, to open our eyes and to help us and to allow us and to lead us into obedience, not disobedience, not rebellion. And that's what the circumcision is all about anyway, to lead us toward the ultimate, you know, a totally circumcised heart, totally obedient to God. And so along the way, God gives us physical steps. And we are not willing to take them. What does that say about our heart? Are we really circumcised in the heart, ultimately speaking? And God doesn't make any differences between Jew and Gentile from the beginning of time. Neither did the apostles do that. And some people think, yes, they did, because they said, well, you know, we all Jews do all this and that, but as for the Gentiles, we commanded them to do only certain things. And we don't realize what is really behind it. What's behind that statement? What were they talking about? They don't understand what they're talking about. They thought that they were, in essence, creating new religions. One for the Jews, one for the non-Jews. The Jews, you know, keep the old religion. And yet for the Gentiles, they have a new religion where they keep only certain things and not the others. The apostles were not talking about that. They were talking about timing issue. You know? And that's what James put it. That way and made it very plain. People don't pay attention to it. He says, look, the verdict is very plain. We do what we know to do from the beginning of time. As we were circumcised the eighth day and we know the law and we walk in it. But as for the Gentiles, he says, well, Moses is read in the synagogue every Sabbath day. What does that mean? That means that let the Gentiles alone at this point. They're like Father Abraham. They're like Ishmael. They're like all the children of Israel that entered into the land of Canaan. That is, before they entered, but by the Jordan. They were, you know, some of them were 40 years old, some 30, some 25, some 10, whatever it may be. They were all under grace. But when the time came, you know, when the time came, that is, then God commanded them to be circumcised. Well, the time, in essence, he's saying, has not come yet for the Gentiles to do it, so leave them alone. As they go to the synagogue, as they learn the laws of God, as they understand the intent, the purpose of it, as they get stronger, as they are ready to go from the milk to the meat of the Word, then that will come in due time. Now, this is what he was saying there. That was the issue. And people totally misunderstood it. And they thought, well, that they were in essence creating a division there between Jew and Gentile. The Jew must keep the law. The Gentile doesn't have to, only has to do a few things. And to this very day, people who are ignorant, as Peter said, they're unlearned, they're twisting the scriptures, not only of Paul, but all the apostles to their own destruction. And so they say, well, I don't have to do this, and I don't have to do that, and I don't have to do the other thing. And they invent their own religion, their own spirituality, and their own way of life. And so they call it Christianity, you know, Christianity versus Judaism. And that's foolishness. It is one law, and God made it very plain. And so this is what he told the children of Israel. And this is what God told them. And this is what Moses is conveying, basically, the mind of God. He's not inventing all those things. So he gives them, in chapter 15 of Numbers, a series of laws. And then he's telling them in verse 13, all that are homeborn shall do these things after this manner. And the homeborn is not talking about the Israelites. He's talking about all the people that you have in your house that you bought. You know, they belong to you, your slaves. You see, as for Israel, that's obviously all of them should do it. But he says, you know, also the homeborn shall do these things after this manner. Why? Because they're all circumcised. In presenting an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto the Eternal. And if a stranger, somebody who is not a homeborn, is not your slave, you didn't buy him, he's not a part of your property, you know, he comes from abroad, another country, for whatever reason, and mind you, God didn't say to Israel, you close the borders as they do today and don't let aliens in. In those days, a stranger could come to another land, as Abraham went to Egypt, you know, Jacob later on went to Egypt. Borders were open in those days. People were more hospitable. Of course, you have a limit to how much hospitable you know, you can be. That's a different issue. But in either case, you've got to be hospitable one way or the other. And so he says, if a stranger sojourn with you, or whosoever may be among you, you see, you know, anybody who is not an Israelite throughout your generations, and will offer an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto the Lord, as you do. Well, some people say, aha, you see, strangers could also come to the temple. And there are people actually who teach that to this very day. That strangers in the old days were allowed to come to the temple and bring offerings to God. No, they were not. You see? Not if they were not circumcised. That's already taken for granted. They're going to be circumcised. Then they're going to be able to do it, not otherwise. And people that don't study the whole matter, you know, they come up with their own doctrines. And I've heard it not too long ago, but somebody was saying that, well, the strangers, you know, even though they were uncircumcised, they could come to the temple, the tabernacle, and offer offerings. And instead of studying the whole matter and realizing, no, only a person who is circumcised is allowed to do that. If he's not, well, you can designate somebody to offer it for him, but he himself cannot go inside. You know, all he could do is come to the so-called, you know, the court of the Gentiles. But if he wants to go all the way in and offer it, he must be circumcised. And God made it very plain from the beginning of time. And that's what we're explaining here. God says, you know, you, your strangers, you know, your slaves, you know, everybody around, all must be circumcised. Then under this condition, he can come and bring that offering. And Israel, unfortunately, transgressed this law many times. And they allowed some people to come all the way because they were reasoning around, you know, using their own understanding instead of being obedient and wholehearted with the law of God and not compromising it. And so when they began to compromise the law of God, they began to allow strangers, at times who were uncircumcised, to even come into the tabernacle, the temple, and bring those offerings. And when they were zealous and devout and faithful to God, they obviously would not do that. So they had periods of time when they were obedient, other periods where they were not. And based on that, you know, they behaved. But God says very plainly, that if a stranger sojourn with you, whosoever may be among you throughout your generations, and will offer an offering made by fire of a sweet savour unto the Lord, as you do, so shall he do. You see? Verse 15, as for the congregation, there shall be one statute for both of you, and for the stranger that sojourns with you, a statute forever throughout your generations. There isn't going to be any division there. There is no partition there between you and them. You know, they have different religion, you've got different religion. You see, when God removed the partition that was between the Jew and the Gentile, that meant that all of them now must be obedient to the same law. Not say, well, I've got a new God, a new religion, mine is Christianity and yours is Judaism. And some people that have no background, they read the statement, they don't understand it. Now he says, as for the congregation, there shall be one statute for you, and for the stranger that sojourns with you, a statute forever throughout your generations. And so when they came to the period of the so-called New Testament, that statute remained. All of them must be obedient to the same law. And when the partition was taken away between Jew and Gentile, all of them must be obedient to the law of God. You see, it's just there are certain things like the circumcision, which is a matter of timing. That's a different story. And so it's going to be said forever throughout your generations, as you are, so shall the stranger be before the Lord. And what are Israel? Are they disobedient? Can they get away with disobedience to the law of God and then come before God? When they did, God says that he does not want them to do that. He condemned them for it. You see? And so it says, as you are obedient to the law of God, so shall the stranger be among you. In verse 16, he made it very plain. One law, that is one Torah, and one ordinance shall be both for you and for the stranger that sojourns with you. You see? And with this in mind, and many other statements like that, that God made very, very plain, that's when the issue of the circumcision rose in the obedience to the entirety of the law of Moses. Well, they did not understand. Yes, God demands the same law for all. For all generations as they come before the Lord, but he also allows grace, period. And a question of timing. And that's something they did not understand, and that was a major issue of the circumcision in the days of the apostles. And yet Israel was not always obedient to the law of God, as they should have been. And they allowed people who are not circumcised, now and then, when they were disobedient. And that's exactly what God later on, as he speaks to Ezekiel, speaking about also, and this time we're dealing with the period of time in the future history of Israel, and yet God reminded Ezekiel to remind Israel of what they used to do in the past. And so he says in Ezekiel, as we read it earlier in chapter 44, And verse 5, and the Lord said to me, Son of man, mark well, see with your eyes and hear with your ears all that I say to you concerning all the ordinances of the house of the Lord. And this is speaking about the future temple, the coming of the Savior of Israel, and all its laws. You see, it has many laws. You've got to keep every single one of them. He said, mark well. Don't be negligent about it. Mark well who may enter the house and all who go out from the sanctuary. In other words, don't let just anybody in. Because in the past, he says, you used to do it. Verse 6, now say to the rebellious of the house of Israel, thus says the Lord God, O house of Israel, let us have no more of all of your abominations. And what abomination is going to zero in at this point? There were many of them, but he's going to zero in on one. Verse 7, when you brought in foreigners, uncircumcised in heart and uncircumcised in flesh, to be in my sanctuary to defile it. You see, that's why there are people today who are ignorant, who think that the uncircumcised were allowed into the temple to bring an offering, because they just read what we just read here in Numbers. That people that wanted to bring offerings, if they were sojourners, they could do it. Instead of understanding, no, they had to be circumcised first. You see the confusion of the mind of men who do not study the entirety of the law. He says, you brought uncircumcised in the flesh to my sanctuary and to defile it, my house. And when you offered my food, the fat and the blood, then they broke my covenant because of all your abominations. And what was the covenant that he gave to Abraham? You see, the promises and all that. He says, this is my covenant with you. Everybody's going to be circumcised who's going to appear before me. And I'll give you all these promises. And then, of course, became the issue of the timing. But it says, verse 8, you, children of Israel, you did not keep, you kept not my charge of my holy things, but you have set others to keep charge of my sanctuary for you. Strangers, Gentiles, uncircumcised. Therefore, bottom line here, verse 9, thus says the Eternal Elohim, Yehovah Elohim. No, and he's speaking now about, as I said, the future temple. You read the whole section here of Ezekiel, the last 8 chapters. It's the millennium. It's the return of Israel. Now, obedient Israel, not rebels anymore. Not those who claim, well, we're Christians, we're followers of Christ, we're New Testament church, we're spiritual. We don't need to do this, we don't need to do that. Verse 9, thus says Yehovah Elohim, the eternal God. This one is the one that became Jesus Christ. Might as well say, thus is Jesus Christ. No foreigner, uncircumcised in the heart, or uncircumcised in the flesh. Nobody, no exceptions, shall enter into my sanctuary, including any foreigner who is among the children of Israel. You see, he made it very plain. And people who are obedient to God, who are wholehearted, who are members of the household of Abraham, not only in word, but in deed, you see, not those who claim to be Jews and they are not. As later on, God would tell John, book of Revelation, you know. People are really deceiving themselves. They think they're spiritual Jews. And Christ said, salvation is of the Jew, speaking about the spiritual Jew. Speaking about the person who is obedient to the law of God. That's what he's talking about. And so it makes it very plain. And people who are obedient understand it. And those who are not obedient don't understand it. Well, anyway, Father Abraham made it very plain. But when you serve God, you serve Him wholeheartedly with everything that is in you, and you don't play games with God. And God says, you don't play games with me, either today, in between, or into the future. And so you see that the teachings of God about the circumcision, because of what it means, have never changed. And so these are the words of Jesus Christ into the future, when He comes. You see, when Israel is brought back before Him, when the temple is rebuilt, when He sits in that throne, in Zion, when the water, you know, that that comes from under the throne, goes here and there, you see. And so we have to look at it from this point of view. Anyway, let's go for one last scripture here in the book of Isaiah in chapter 52. And we are talking about the millennium, we're talking about the future, because this is what God is saying here to His people in chapter 52 of Isaiah. And verse 1, we read, awake, awake, put on your strength, O Zion. Put on your beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city. For the uncircumcised and the unclean shall no longer come to you. And that's in essence how God concludes his feelings about this whole matter. The time is going to come where all those who are rebellious, who hate the law of God, who display by their attitude of unwillingness to be wholehearted with God and walk in His law, which basically what the circumcision is all about, this is what it symbolizes, this is what it signifies, and it's for that reason that God, to begin with, issued this decree the first time, the command that He gave to Abraham, that this is what I want you to do. He was not looking for just a mere meaningless ritual, physical ceremony, but the spirit that is in it is a very, very profound, the spiritual content. Now, that's in essence what the Apostle Paul was talking about. A lot of people, in their ignorance, no knowledge, no understanding, they think that the Old Testament is the letter of the law and the New Testament is the spirit of the law, and there is nothing spiritual about the Old Testament, so let's do away with it. We are spiritual now, we're a New Testament church, we have the spirit of the law, so we go through the New Testament. And to the old we go for, you know, a little inspiration here and there, like in the Psalms. And yet Paul, speaking to ignorant people like that, he told them in Corinthians chapter 10, and speaking to Gentiles, not to Israelites obviously, and he says to them in verses, 1 to 4, I don't want you to be ignorant. In other words, when he uses this kind of a language, he's saying basically you are ignorant, but I don't want you to be ignorant. How our fathers came through the Red Sea, you know, our fathers, not yours, and they were all baptized to Moses in the cloud and in the Red Sea. So baptism happened first with the children of Israel. It's not a new ceremony that happened 2,000 years ago. You know, that's the impression that some people may want to give you in their ignorance, that 2,000 years ago a new religion began. It's called Christianity. There was no such a thing. Oh yes, a false religion began 2,000 years ago that took a mixture of truth and an awful lot of error and called it Christianity, a new religion. And later on another religion came and also took some truth and a lot of error in it and they called it another religion, Islam. And that's the way it works. The religion of God did not begin, not even in Sinai. It began from the Garden of Eden. And it goes on until eternity. And so, Paul was making it very plain to the Gentiles, and that should have been a lesson to all to understand and to read and to comprehend. And yet, they totally ignored these words of the Apostle Paul, and for that matter, many other teachings of the Bible. And he told them that the children of Israel, they were the first who were baptized. They were baptized unto Moses, yes. But they were baptized. They were washed. And of course, those were symbolic things that they were going through. They weren't thinking about, you know, we are being baptized as we go through the Red Sea or by the cloud. What he's saying here, it's a spiritual content, in essence. It's not just physical terminology of history or things that happened in the past. And he said that they were baptized unto Moses, and they all followed that spiritual rock. You see, he said they all ate that spiritual spiritual food that he gave them. They all drank that spiritual drink and they all followed that spiritual rock, and that rock was Christ. You see? He didn't say it was all physical, all letter of the law. And some people misunderstand his statement about the letter that kills and the administration and the glorious administration, the old that was replaced by the new one, and the thing that everything in the old days was the letter of the law and was physical. No, it was spiritual. But unfortunately, those who did not have the Spirit, which were the majority of the children of Israel, they did not see it as such. That's why God constantly bemoaned the fact that they were not circumcised in their heart and said, oh, that you would circumcise your heart. You see? So you would understand the Spirit of the law that I'm giving you, not just the letter of it, and be obedient and have a heart that is circumcised and worship me in truth and in spirit. Moses did, Abraham did, the prophets did, those with whom God dealt, who served God, who had God's Spirit, and many others, they did. They understood that it was the Spirit of the law. And so they understood circumcision, and so did Paul. He fully comprehended what circumcision was all about, and that's why he was emphasizing that. And some people who have no knowledge, no understanding, who do not comprehend, don't know the context, the background, and all that, They totally misunderstood what the circumcision issue was all about in the New Testament, and to this very day, there are many in our midst who don't understand it either. And yet, the scripture was very plain. And then if you go to the end of the book, totally the end of the book, the end of the story, in chapter 21, we're not talking only about the coming of Christ, beyond the coming of Christ, the coming of the heavenly Jerusalem, of the Father, when he's going to be on this earth, that's where it's the end of the story. That is the present era of men. After that, there is going to be a new era, new heaven, new earth. In chapter 21, verses 2 to 27, basically talks about the same reality also, that the heaven in Jerusalem coming down, and the Father is going to be in it. And then, as far as the people who are going to be in it are the people who are going to be circumcised. You see? At this time, they're all spirit beings. So obviously, the emphasis is on the spiritual circumcision. But before that, they were also physically and spiritually circumcised. They were obedient to the law of God, you know, given the time issue. And these are, in essence, the people of Israel, anyway, that are going to be in Jerusalem, the people of God, the bride. And this whole chapter talks about the bride, talks about the heavenly Jerusalem, and equates both as the same. And then at the end it says, well, in verse 25 it says, its gate shall not be shut at all by day, there shall be no night there, and they shall bring the glory and honor of the nations into it. So the nations are all around, you see. In verse 24 it says, and the nations of those who are saved, those who are going to be delivered, they shall walk in its light, and the kings of the earth bring their glory and honor into it. And so you see, the bride is in Jerusalem, the wife of God is in Jerusalem, Israel is in Jerusalem, they're all spiritual now, they're all spirit beings, and all the rest of the nations, which are the children, they're all around the earth, and so they bring their glory. And when the time comes, we'll fully understand what that really means. In verse 27 he says, but there shall be by no means, there shall by no means enter it anything that defiles or causes an abomination. In other words, uncircumcised. See, that's how God described it, you know, as we read in Ezekiel. When he talked about abominations, he spoke in specific. Obviously, there are many, but the reality is when a person is uncircumcised, first in the flesh, he's not willing to accept the law of God. And if he's not, he certainly is not going to be circumcised in the spirit. And if he's not, obviously he's going to commit all kind of abominations. And so all of these are linked together. And God says, such people are not going to be there. But only those who are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And the ones who are going to be written there are the ones who are going to follow the faith of Abraham and his footsteps. And his example, including that of Jesus Christ himself, who himself, when he came in the flesh, was circumcised, which means that's the way he walked. And if we are to follow him, we must walk in his footsteps. And this was a part of it. And so when you understand the totality of the concept, you realize it's more than just a little ritual, and this is not what God is concerned so much about, you know, just a little bit of flesh removed. That was not the main issue. You see, the Jews blew it totally out of proportion, unfortunately, because they were not looking into the spirit of the matter. And so they did not appreciate the circumcision of the heart as they should have with the Gentiles. And were not as patient as God was with Abraham and the children of Israel for the physical circumcision to occur. They wanted it all right now, the whole thing. This is what Paul is trying to slow them down on and make them understand. Think about the most important things first. Anyway, I think, I hope that many have a greater understanding now and appreciation for this issue of the circumcision, and accordingly will understand it, and whatever the Spirit leads anybody to do, that's between God and that person. And so we shall go back now to chapter 18 of Genesis, where we read in verse 1, and the Lord appeared unto him, that is to Abraham, by the terebinths, that is the trees of Mamre, Elone Mamre in Hebrew. Mamre was a friend of Abraham, and so he dwelt in his territory there. And those were called the trees, you know, the terebinths of Mamre, because I guess he's the one either planted them or just belonged to him. as he sat in the tent door in the heat of the day. And when you're in that land, you realize when it's hot, you don't go outside. And so that's basically what was happening. Heat of the day. And it was roughly something about 2-3 o'clock. And he lifted up his eyes and looked, and lo, three men. Now here they're described as three men. Stood over against him. Oftentimes angels and God himself are described as men. And when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door. Now you're talking about a 100-year-old man already. You see? He sees them, he runs. You know, he's not walking, he's running. Obviously he knew who they were. And also you think about the concept of the hospitality, you know, the hospitality of the Middle East. That is to this very day. Of course it's not as it should be with everybody. It's selective, unfortunately, because there are a lot of animosities there. But, you know, the hospitality, generally speaking, is a legendary one in the Middle East and has been always stressed a lot by many scriptures and culturally, and on a national basis and tribal basis and so forth. It was a sacred duty to show hospitality to strangers. And so he ran toward them and he bowed down to the earth. Obviously, he realizes, how, you know, he saw God several times before that, and probably some of the angels that came with him. He's aware of the identity of these people. And so he runs toward them, he bows down to the earth and said, "My Lord," and notice, there are three of them, but he says, "My Lord," because he's addressing the one in the center, probably, the Eternal, Adonai. Because only God was called Adon. And "My Lord" became a general terminology, actually, for anybody who is a master of the house, or you just call him Sir, you know, in English. And so it says, "My Lord, if I now have found favor in your sight, pass not away, I pray you, from your servant." You see the humility there. And obviously, in this case, you're talking about Abraham meeting again, one among many times, his creator. And verse 4, "Let now a little water be fetched, and wash your feet, and recline yourselves under the tree." Now, the foot washing figures out an awful lot in the Bible. Because again, like the circumcision itself, it's not just a meaningless ritual ceremony, as it became, unfortunately, in the past 2,000 years. It's really meaningless to many, because it's not the real thing. What is the real thing? You see, when people come from the road, and especially in those days, weary travelers, they come wearing sandals. They didn't have shoes in those days, and it's not until recent you know, the last few centuries that people started wearing shoes, and that's in the cities. But when they lived in the countryside, and even people that came from the countryside in the cities, you know, they had sandals, and they walked many miles or kilometers or whatever it may be, their feet are tired, they're dusty, and what they need is relief, comfort, hospitality. They need to be refreshed. And so obviously the whole culture developed around that. If you are hospitable, if you are a kind person, if you care about your neighbor, if you love your neighbor as yourself, you see, if you live in a normal society where people love each other and care for each other, and you know, there is a culture that binds them and common interests and so forth, and that becomes natural, that you want to help. You see, God put in our heart naturally to be affectionate by nature. And then when sin and iniquity enters, we lose that and we harden our heart and we don't care about our neighbor. And today we live in a society where you don't even know your next door neighbor, even though you see him every day and you basically hardly even say hi or goodbye or whatever it may be. Well, that's not the way of life that God his intended for his children to have, we develop that kind of life. But here, in a normal society of the day, agrarian society, that became very natural. And, you know, when you live in that society, you begin to appreciate it so much more. It's harder to understand it in the city, to comprehend it. You don't experience it. You know, you can just intellectually think about it, and that's all. But if you ever went camping, you know, and you were tired, and your feet are tired, and you're dusty and all that, well, the natural thing to want is to be washed, to be cleansed, to be purged, so to speak, from the dirt, you know, to have your feet placed in cold water so you can feel better. You know, you appreciate it so much more so. And you think about feet that are not only dusty, but smelly. You may not be as bothered by it because these are your feet, you know, you're used to it. And so you can imagine the host, if he's willing to do it, that shows an awful lot of humility and respect and love and affection and honor, you know, the same way that a mother has toward her child, a little baby, you know, when he's messed up. You know, she's willing to do all those things for him. So you see that the spiritual connotation that is here, the attitude. And so foot washing is not, you know, it's unfortunately became, as I said, in the past 2,000 years, a meaningless ceremony. It's a sort of a make-believe. It's not what Christ had in mind when he was talking about it. He's talking about the real thing. When you do it under real circumstances, not just symbolically. You see, that does not convey really much when you think about it. And so he's saying here, you come and wash your feet. And obviously, as things develop, the master oftentimes would let one of his servants, that is, the head servants, do the job. You know, that became the menial job of the servant, to do it. Unless the guest was a special person, then the master himself would do it. Well, Abraham, he's the one going to do it himself. He's not calling any of his servants to do it. He has God coming before him and the two angels, and he's the one who's going to do it himself. And again, it was not a meaningless ceremony there because the feet of God and of the angels were really dusty. You see, they were not pretending. It was not a pretend. You know, just wash my feet, you know, so we can go through this meaningless ceremony. You know, it was a real thing, a real circumstance. And so God worked it out to be that way. They literally walked, he and the angels, on the dirt. And their feet got dirty, and they had sandals on. And that's how they appeared. So I have to think about it from this point of view. A real thing. God is not interested in unreal thing, you know, in artificial things, in make-believe things, but the real thing. And this is what it was. And this is what he told them. And later on, the foot washing concept, as you see it in many, many places, has developed into an art, into a central piece of hospitality. If you are willing to wash the feet of a person, then you invite that person after you wash his feet. He is refreshed, he feels better, and he feels welcome, and you do it by the manner in which you do it, and especially if the master himself is the one that does the foot washing. And then the stranger really feels extremely welcome there. And then you offer food before the person. Then you have a nice conversation. And, you know, if he needs some provisions, you give him those things too. And it developed into a cultural art and had an awful lot of meaning into it. And in the Middle East, in many parts, they don't always do it, but they used to do it more in the past. And somebody came to your tent, so to speak, and he washed his feet. Then it became your sacred duty to care for all of his needs, and even beyond that. If by any chance there was such a thing as an attack, enemies, whatever it may be, as somebody that came to your tent and he washed his feet and now he's eating, you know, from your bread, he's under your care, and therefore you have to be willing even to give your own life to defend that person, you see, and to give whatever is precious to you to defend that person. So you have to see the entirety of the concept of the foot washing there, just like with the circumcision. Some people don't understand it, and so they really don't appreciate what Christ was talking about in terms of the foot washing. And the only way you can appreciate that if you really go through the real thing, and it's not an artificial ceremony. And so you see later on in the case of Lot in chapter 19, in verse 2, when he was sitting at the gate, a man of hospitality, and just like Abraham was sitting there in the tent, and when he saw them, the three men, one of them was God, he ran toward them. Lot was sitting there in the gate of Sodom, as we read in chapter 19, and the two angels came because God was still speaking to Abraham and he was not going down there. He sent the two angels, and the two angels came to Sodom at even, it was an evening time, because that was when the evening, in other words, when the meal that they had with Abraham was over. And Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. Now, why do you sit in the gate in the even? Well, because last minute, sort of, so-called travelers, weary, tired, dusty feet, they come into the gate of the city before they close the gate, for the night. And at that time, it's a question, where are you going to spend the night? And he was a very hospitable man, so he made it a custom to sit there in the evening at the gate. Of course, some people came up with a different idea of what it really meant. They think, well, what it meant, he sat at the gate, that means he was a government official, and he was a part of Sodom and Gomorrah, and all such foolish things, having no knowledge and understanding of the context or the background, and the concept of hospitality and all that. So they totally misunderstood what Lot was doing here. And so he was sitting there, and he saw the two angels, and Lot saw them, and rose up to meet them. And he's not a young man either. And he fell down on his face to the earth. You see? Now, you don't do that before just anybody. A weary traveler comes by. This is not the custom. See? So obviously he too understood. Because he was with Abraham. And when he was with Abraham, there were angels coming. And God came. So, you have to think of the background, the context, to understand what you are reading. And what's happening here. And he fell down on his face to the earth and said, "Behold now my lords." So he's speaking to them in the plural because there are two of them. Well, Abraham was speaking only to the one that he recognizes as the creator. And he says, "Behold now my lords, turn aside I pray you into your servant's house." He's a servant. You see, that's how Abraham introduces himself. Your servant. And that shows humility also. And people who were of that mind, of that spirit, of that attitude, even treated the stranger in that manner. In other words, I'm going to serve you. See, that's a concept. And therefore, you now becomes like the master. I'll wash your feet. I'll care for your needs. You see, this is the ultimate concept of hospitality and the foot washing. And if you don't understand that, you really don't appreciate what Christ was talking about. And we'll come to that too. And so he said, "Behold now, my lords, turn aside, I pray you, into your servant's house and tarry all night." You see, not only come, but you stay all night. I'll care for all of your needs. And wash your feet. You see? Now, I'm not going to be the ones who are going to do it when he says wash your feet. That means I'm going to do it for you. See, it's a part of the hospitality. You don't ask the guest to do his own foot washing. You do it for him. Either you send a servant to do it or you do it yourself. And then you shall rise, you said, early and go on your own way. You see? And so, when you study that, and you see the different examples in the Bible about it, then when you come to the future, in the writings of the apostles, in the so-called New Testament, and you come to John 13, then you begin to understand what was it all about. It's not just an empty ceremony, you see. It's not just a ritual that you do it because, you're supposed to do it, and that's how you show humility. It's far beyond that. You totally give yourself through this act of foot washing to care for the needs of somebody else. In other words, you fulfill, in its ultimate sense, the law that says you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And when you walk on the dusty roads of the journey, you know, between city to city, whatever it may be. You are tired, you are hungry, you're thirsty, you're sweaty. What you wish for, what you dream about, you know, what you think about is getting to a place where you can relax and be comforted, wash your feet, feel comfortable, be refreshed, have, well, you know, nice company, a nice meal, and a lodging place for the night, you see, and a genuine person to be with, nice conversation, and, you know, and refreshing your needs, you know, for provisions and things like that, you see. So an awful lot of things go into that, and that demands the very attitude that you have in circumcision, a totality. You see, a circumcised person does all these things for his neighbor, from his heart, not in a grudging way. And so the ultimate of it, you know, just like Abraham is doing it here to God, the one that became Jesus Christ, so is now God doing it to the children of Abraham. Well, anyway, we're going to read this account and leave it for next time in the lesson, since we don't have much time left on the tape. So this is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people. Next time we'll cover this section of the law, of the foot washing.